Hey, there we go. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and today I have Lewis Porter Jr. beneath me here in the Brady Bunch grid. Good to have you on, sir, and I apologize for not having you on years ago. I do a podcast focusing on superhero stuff, and you guys have been in that space for a little while now, so
No problem. Welcome. People are busy. I totally understand it, man. You know, I'm a single parent. I totally understand busy. I get it.
Fair enough. And over here on this side, upper and lower, we have Walt Rebilliard and Jacob Blackman, usual co-host, coming back to help me out. How you guys doing?
So groovy. Right. So good.
All right. Cool.
It's a good morning.
I want to point out that only 50% of us have the quarantine beard this morning, and that's okay.
I let this go a little too long again, yes.
Some of you guys have cleaned up from quarantine. That's okay. I respect you.
Oh, I had to. 12 weeks. 12 weeks is a long time to grow a crappy beard, so.
Yeah, I know. Been doing the same, my friend. Been doing the same. So, Lewis, I brought to my attention, you're doing kind of a, let's call it a push right now on Mutants and Masterminds. Got an email from you. You were, from your Patreon, you were talking to other publishers saying, hey, let's do some ad exchanges, that kind of thing. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so let me tell you the big plan, and then I'll break it down to tiny.
Cool.
The big plan is that I want to build a area that if you're into Mutants and Masterminds, if you're superpowered by Eminem, we want to build a world where people can play on different worlds. Think of it kind of like what WotC's done with Forgotten Realms, Eberron. Like, everybody's got their own little world they're like playing in, but it's all interconnected. And travel between shouldn't be difficult, and I've always believed that's something simple that we can all agree on. You know, if people like your game, they might see another game they like to play. Oh, this world's kind of cool. There's some stuff I want to grab. And that's what it should be like. But the industry as a whole, everybody's like, I got my own world, and I'm going to have this thing, and you can't do anything with it. And it's like, no, dude, let's team up. Let's work together. Teamwork is always good. So, I'm big on that. So with the whole amazing universe concept was basically, I built a superhero world I've been building in my head for the last 10 years. If I was going to build an actual comic book company, there's storylines, there's connections. I've done all the research on it, and I've been working on it forever. And eventually I just said, you know, this is silly. Why don't I just turn it into gaming material? I like Mutants and Masterminds. I know people want to do this kind of stuff. I have lots of friends who are comic book fans and comic book writers. So just reach out to them and let's do some cool stuff. And I was like, okay, great. And so the first person I think I reached out to was Mark Hart, who we had some initial products we did a couple years ago. Yeah, when we first got the license for templates, because I'm a big fan of templates. If people don't understand, I like templates for some weird reason. It works well. I think templates was one of the greatest inventions out of the OGL. For example, my biggest complaint, people want to play Ghost Rider. But Ghost Rider can really move from person to person. You know, there's like three different people as Ghost Rider, and it's still Ghost Rider, but they're all different variations of Ghost Rider. But there are some things that are specifically Ghost Rider-ish, as I'm going to call it. And those, to me, that's a template. Ghost Rider is a template. You get it. You get this curse. You get it for a little bit. Someone else can get it. You can still have it. It moves from person to person. And I think that's kind of a better way to describe it, because like Venom is a prime example of a template. Yeah, I got the Spider-Man costume on. I got all those powers, but I may not use it the same way. I might have different little things to it. So that kind of fit very well for superheroes. And a lot of people were doing like very traditional templates like, oh, it's an animal. It's this thing. But I was like, why don't you do superhero stuff? Like another great one, Wonder Man. The first time you see Wonder Man, he's got this invention that gives him all these powers. It's like, ooh, I've got superpowers. Ain't I great? But in reality, it's like he basically changes him over time to the actual Wonder Man we're used to. And they do the same process as like three other villains. And they all have the same kind of effect. And I'm like, well, that's kind of a template. You know, energy-infused characters, you get these powers from this thing, and you may mutate later on to get something else. So, yeah, I'm a pretty serious comic book geek, and if people don't know that, which I think would be surprising, you know, I'm very much about, let's get to the history, let's dig through some stuff, let's get to some interesting stuff, and let's see how we can make it for gaming.
Right on. What your superhero stuff like has been very sweeping over a long period of time. Your love of superheroes and the superhero genre has also kind of crossed genres for you too, like Neo Exodus.
Yeah.
I got Neo Exodus for the first time right before I went to Iraq over 10 years ago. And that was sublime reading while I was out there, and kind of scratched a multitude of itches.
That's my baby. I always love that one. It always goes back to Babylon 5. If there was no Babylon 5, there would be no Exodus, 100%.
Right. But I mean, some of those same tropes that you find in like superhero comics kind of played across those lines as well. Because I remember in some of the design journals you were talking about way back in the day, and like you were one of the first people who were doing like driving in your car and just talking about talking about design.
Don't do that.
I love those videos. Those were great.
Those videos were awesome.
You know, I was laughing because it's like, you know, I'm paying attention to the road in Florida. You should, because Florida's crazy drivers. That's why I say I got to stop doing that. I'll just start walking. It's safer to walk. I'm doing something. Yeah, I mean, Neo Exodus was really, you know, this sounds bad when I say it like this, but I always hated how fantasy is presented. It never made sense to me. Like Eberron is the closest thing to what I think fantasy should be. And, you know, starting at that point, it makes a lot of sense. Oh, yeah, technology and magic will definitely be a mixture. I get that. And Neo Exodus is just basically that iteration of that. 100%. And you know, I've never liked a lot of the fantasy races, because I'm like, dwarves, they're just short people. Elves are just tall, thin, lovely. I was like, let's make some real, you know, make some real racial differences. Let's make some stuff that people haven't seen before. And you know, I stole a lot of stuff from comic books from there. Like the Sinaeans are it's a thing from the Fantastic Four. I wanted to do cool rock people, but cool jewel people are cooler than cool rock people. So I was like, I stole that. the Folding Circle. We stole the name from the New Warriors team. And basically, it's the Fatal Five. We made the Fatal Five from Legion of Superheroes for New Exodus, because it's one of my favorite teams. I like the five members are they're just ridiculously powerful, as it should be. And it's like, just play them like that. So that's why we did that. So anytime I can steal something to use somewhere else, oh, yeah. I mean, we did our version of the Psycor. You know, it's basically the premise of the setting was based off of World War One. The Archduke Ferdinand gets assassinated, and everybody starts pointing their guns at each other, saying, "Who did it?" And then the war breaks out. And that's kind of the same thing I stole from that. I tell people, steal from history. There's lots of cool stuff in history that you'd never believe is like real, but it's like, oh my god, that actually happened. It's like great stuff. So
yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff about World War One. People don't even know about it or learn about it. It's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, you know, and you can hide it up so easily nowadays. But some people don't get to see stuff. Or even better, when they see it, they go, "Oh, I know what you did." I'm like, "Good, then you're paying attention. I appreciate that." So yeah, I mean, yeah, Neo Exodus is definitely, you know, it is definitely my baby. I have to thank specifically Jeff Lee. Jeff Lee wrote a lot of stuff for Neo Exodus. I talk about Jeff Lee usually whenever I do any kind of stuff. Jeff Lee is one of my favorite writers. We've been working together for years. And I met Jeff at PaizoCon. I can't remember what year it was. Literally, Jeff came up to me and asked me, could he do work with me? And, you know, he wanted some trial stuff. I was like, sure. So I gave him, like, the hardest project in the world. And I feel bad about this, but it told me a lot about him. So I said, sure. I got the little book about NPCs I need you to do. He goes, well, how many stat blocks do you need? I'm like, like 57 or something. And he's like, sure, I'll do it. I'm like, yeah, but they're all going to be different, you know, different levels. And he's like, sure, no problem. Did the job. It wound up being, I think it's 54 was the actual number. Never complained. Never said anything bad. Never had a problem. Did the job excellently. And I told him after that, I said, you have a job with me forever. You never have to worry about working for anybody. I will always have work for you. Don't even worry about it. And of course, now that we're doing the Amazing Universe stuff, he signed on to do our adventures. And we know each other very well. We worked together a long time. So it's like, he already knows what I'm going to ask for, what kind of crazy thing I'm going to do. And it's a lot of fun in that aspect. Also with that, I got another buddy of mine, Lee Hammack, who's been, I've known Lee since for 20 years now. Lee was the first person to do a product with me back when the first edition of Mutant Masters Minds came out. And we did a product called Power Corrupts. And basically that product was all about doing Marvel role-playing games, Ultimate Powers book. It's one of my favorite books of all time. I love powers. And one power that never gets put in books a lot and it always upsets me is a stupid power, but I love it so much. it's a power called Catalyst Control. If you're a fan of Legion of Superheroes, it's the Chemical King's abilities. It just controls chemical reactions. And if you've got a good imagination and a little bit of science, you can do some devastating things with this. Like, one of my favorite ones would always be like, oh, I'm gonna break apart the bond between oxygen and hydrogen and water. Not, you know, so it turns water basically into its two component parts. Not a big deal, but if you're facing guys who do like or water characters, it's devastating to them. My other favorite one, you know, causing rust, causing things to rust quickly. The one that I've used so often, it's kind of ridiculous. Usually used against superpower guys, very buff guys. My guy will usually use the power on them, and then they'll go and punch him. And what he does is he weakens the bones in your hand, and basically your hand through your arm, and just rots them through. So the second you make impact, your hand collapses due to the damage you're causing. So it turns basically people into pretty, it's pretty graphic, and it's pretty funny to me. I love it. I'm like, oh, that's super strange. Didn't work out like you planned. And like, oh my God, my arm. It's like, yeah, we're gonna have to deal with that. That's a problem. So yeah. But you know, that's one of my, you know, there's abilities like that you don't always see. So I want people to say, hey, let's try this stuff out. So we did a ton. We did 50 powers initially, and then we did the sequel. We did another 50. And you know, Lee's been working with me. Lee's worked on everything I've ever done. Any kind of D20, D20 Modern, D20 Future, Pathfinder, D&D, and now Mutants Masterminds. He's going to be doing more adventure stories too. So, yeah, I'm just trying to make really cool stuff where we could all get together and do cool stuff.
Do you have a favorite edition of Mutants and Masterminds?
I'm a classic kind of guy. The first edition, because it is the first edition. But once again, it's like, it's not even, the rule set's the rule set. It's like what you do with it. You can do anything with good rules, you know? And, you know, Green Runner knows how to do rules. So let's just put down, they know what they're doing. They've got a solid system, and I like it. I just wish we could do more stuff. I just wish I had more people to do more stuff, because of course I want to do big crossover adventures. I mean, I don't want to do Crisis, because everybody's done Crisis. But I do want to do the Green Lantern, Blackest Night, Sinestro Corps, things that are like big and big. But at the same time, you can do a lot of cool things and get people to cross over in different ways. Because not everybody plays the same kind of superhero game.
The time traveling adventure when the Justice League goes back and meets Batman Beyond. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. There's cool stuff. Tons of cool stuff. The comic books, I'm looking at my shelf. I got tons of books over here that just, you know, are ridiculous. You know, I mean, it's sad to say. I mean, my life is so pathetic. I can grab comic-related stuff within 5 feet of me.
That's not a bad thing.
I mean, this is ridiculous. Yeah, at all times, there's something within reach, which is so disturbing when I think about it like that.
Yeah, I just have to roll about 3 feet this way, and I can do the same thing. So
yeah, see, we all have issues, but it's okay. We all understand it. It's okay. It's all right.
Well, we have long boxes and bookcases for those issues, so it's all right. But yeah, I thought for a long time there's kind of a void in RPG adventures for those big cosmic action things like the Lantern War, or God, there've been like 5 or 6 Green Lantern events, you know, big Star Wars type space war battles that you don't really, there's not a lot of stuff out there in superhero RPGs that really scratches that itch.
Well, also I think the problem is, you know, building it, you know, I mean, honestly, okay. So let me tell you, so we've decided we're going to be doing a living campaign, our living, amazing universe. And really we want to just tell big, big stories. So we basically built our adventures to work a very specific way. We have what we call our alpha, our main core stuff, and our omega. Our alpha is basically your session zero. It's basically, this is the character, this is the adventure is going to be about, and here's 4 sample characters you can play in this setting. And it's 4 characters we're creating actually right now. And it's just generic, so you know about what this adventure will be like. We've broken the adventures down into chapters, which we're calling encounters. So there's probably going to be 6 encounters per every module. And they just read blah, 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 like a storyline, like a comic book. Same kind of thing. And at the end of it, you're going to have your omega. Now, what I initially planned to do was this was going to be a separate piece that's going to be like the undergoing on of the campaign. Now, this was going to be specifically available only at our Patreon, that you could only get this adventure only there. It's going to tell you some more behind-the-scenes stuff, plus it's going to be something to play. So, you know, you're going to find out, while it's all glossy and bright on the top, the real dirty stuff is right here in this Omega adventure. But here's the funny part. So I'm listening to a podcast today. I'm talking about House of X and Power of X. And I'm in the shower getting ready, and I get a revelation. And I'm like, wouldn't it be cool? Instead of like starting at Alpha and leading these people all the way through and all these adventures, and then they get to the big, big event that begins, starts, or ends, depending. What if we did it backwards? What if you could, and this is like a, I guess I'm stealing this from J. Michael Straczynski. What if in the Omega Adventure, we show the thing that happens right before the big battle starts? So think of it like this. I'll use Crisis as a great example. The first issue of Crisis comes up, and in the last four pages, you get the start of the battle, the last battle between the Anti-Monitor, Superman, at that last issue 12. And as you keep going forward in the story, the Omega Adventures go backwards. So at some point, you meet in the middle. So everything you need to know is like, let's say, I'll use a Babylon 5 term, is in year 3. Year 1, you don't know what's going on. It doesn't make sense. Year 2 gives you some more information. You're like, okay, but year 3, all the stuff that's going on, it's going to happen. You understand why it's going to happen. And all the stuff that happened before, you know why it happened before. And this is why it all makes sense. So in that third year, that little gap's like, here's everything. Now you know. You might end up here, but it might be worse off than you thought, or even crazier. The stuff you saw that happening now, and all, oh, now I know why that happened. Now I, you know, like the line in Babylon 5, you know, when Veer goes to Mr. Morton and tells him what does he want. You know, that took 2 years to pay off. But the payoff was so sweet because everyone loved it, because we all knew that was going to happen. And, you know, I think that's something you got to lay the seed so far in advance, but at the same time, you got to have the little payoff for them as they're getting to the payoff.
So is that something we're going to see? Is this a shower adventure that could span time and space?
Well, yeah, because I already know. Okay, so I guess I'll tell it. It's not a big deal. I already know it. So we'd always planned in my setting initially, we don't have any aliens and there's no magic. But there is, but there isn't. I'll talk about magic's the easier one. So I stole the idea from magic of how we're going to do it from Planetary, for what Warren Ellis said. And magic is the cheat code to the universe.
I love that. That was one of the best ways of ever describing how magic works.
Right, and it's like it's so simple. It's like, oh, I get that. So we said that same thing. So we're like, boom, all right, got it, easy. Aliens have always been something that's kind of important. You know, aliens should be. I mean, look, we believe we're all out here by ourselves. But you imagine, oh, maybe one day they'll be aliens. But no, we've always had aliens in our setting. We don't mention. We mention. An event that happens. Roswell does happen, but it's a little different than what people think. Flash forward in our whole living campaign, at our big, big super event will be an alien invasion. But you're going to spend the next, well, I say 5 years, building up for that alien invasion, including there are aliens who've been here for a long time. We just didn't know they were aliens. And in the game itself, in the campaign setting, we placed them in just at random, you know? Oh, you thought this guy was human? No, he's always been an alien. He's been an alien spy from this day point. And we're going to reveal all that over time so people can get the feel of it and be like, oh, my God, I didn't even know. So it helps make the story better.
That's kind of a secret invasion, if you will.
Oh.
Hey, let me say hi to Ruben Romero from the Agency Comic Book, who is watching us on Facebook. Good to see you, Ruben.
Ruben.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to steal the good stuff. That's, you know, that was a brilliant idea. It's simple and it works.
Yeah, fair enough. No one wants to steal the Clone Saga, though. I'm not going to understand why.
You know, It could have been great.
So
honestly, the Clone Saga that they did in Ultimate Spider-Man was a pretty good storyline.
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, I like the idea of Ben Reilly. I like that idea. I like that Spider-Man was clone. I like that Ben developed his own suit. He looked different than Spider-Man. He handled it differently than Peter. I always think that was a precursor to get Miles Morales. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Spider-Man, but it's not Spider-Man. But it's Spider-Man. And, you know, I think like most people, I'm an old comic collector, and I'm like, no, I don't know who this kid is. I don't care. And then I saw Into the Spider-Verse. I'm like, oh, I totally get it now. Totally get it. Makes sense. And, you know, now I love Miles. I think Miles is a great character now.
I think that movie did that for a lot of people who were like, Miles, he's not Peter Parker. Get out of here. And they saw that movie like, oh, All right, you sold me the character. I get it now. I keep mentioning this book, and I'm sorry because we're talking about your stuff, but Spider-Man Life Story by Chip Zdarsky came out, I want to say 2019, and it takes all that stupid stuff in Spider-Man's 40 years, and you know, each it's like a 4 or 5 issue miniseries, and each issue is a 10-year segment. And it just redeems so much bullshit, like the Clone Saga, and makes it dramatic and interesting. And I almost think there's, like, with the Ultimates doing a good version of Clone Saga, it almost seems like, I don't know, a lot of comics history is, like, fertile for taking these half-assed ideas and then, you know, making something out of them. But anyway, that's a whole tangent. We're here talking about Lewis Porter Jr. And
oh no, that's comics and tangents. That's my favorite thing. Oh, you can't.
I know. But we could be here till 5 o'clock this afternoon, evening, doing that. But let's talk about your Patreon. Tell me what you guys are selling and how people can get a piece of it.
Basically, I'm going to use my Patreon to pimp out my writers, my artists. See, I mean, we have a Patreon, and yes, we get money for it, but really, the money is going to the writers. All of our goals are really specifically to get more money and get more stuff so we can get more stuff to make more stuff. And it's not like I'm going to take the money and be running off and going to, going down to Miami, throwing dollars up in the air. You know, that's no. I mean, one of our big goals is we're trying to get our archetypes, AKA our iconics, made. And we have 7, 6, 8 of those already planned. We're working on number one right now, but we just got another donor last night. So we're getting very close to getting our first one up and ready, and I've got to get the art for that.
When you say iconics, what do you mean?
I'm calling them prototype heroes that you can play in our universe. They're generic versions of cool characters. Okay, so battle armor. Great example. Everyone thinks battle armor is like an Iron Man, da da da. And yeah, that's what I think when I think about like a power suit, battle suit, whatever you want to call it. My version of that's a little different. I decided to take a picture I like and build from there. And the picture I took was from Robotech, specifically the Invid Wars. And it's a guy who's got a cyclone. He's got a cyclone armor. I've always loved the idea that the motorcycle and the armor work together. And it's like, oh, that's like great. You could hide your armor as your motorcycle and no one would freak out. I'm like, that's what we're going to do. So I stole that idea 100%. No, and I have no shame in telling who I steal stuff from. No shame. And I told my artist, he saw the picture, but he hasn't drawn it yet. I'm like, this is what I want to do, but I want to change a couple things, but this is what we want. He's like, okay, great. And I told the writers, well, let me phrase that. I gave the writers a project to let them do it. I'm like, you can write whatever you want. Here's the image it looks like. You tell me what the history is going to be. You tell me how you're going to design it. I have two guys working on it, the two new guys. They're teaming up and they're working together. They're still working on it. I haven't seen it. They've asked me some questions. And, you know, we're going to have that character readily available for free that people can use in their games. So if you're looking for a PL-10 character, if you're just starting out and you want a different type of, you know, battle suit, here's something to look at. Okay, and we're going to cover all the bases like that.
All right. So the iconics are sort of a line of pre-gens set in the Amazing Universe.
I would say it's – I don't even know if it's set. It kind of is, but I'm not sure if it is. Because you might be like, hey, let's talk to some other publishers. Let's put your iconics with it and just have a big file that anybody can grab characters out whenever they want to use them.
All right. So
I'm sure Fading Good Games universe would be rife with characters like this.
I think that would be a good idea. I've heard rumors about that. That might be a good idea.
Because they got a lot of characters based on public domain stuff that are new versions of those public domain characters, but would be perfect to integrate with something like the Amazing Universe.
I like that idea. But once again, I'm all for let's try different things. The worst that happens, we mess up, we start again.
Fair enough. So the Amazing Universe, we're also doing, you said there's going to be a campaign, a living campaign, so a series of adventures?
Yes. The first year, I know we have 6 adventures, maybe 7. We have our... The first adventure is against our traditional bad guy, Hydra, AIM, collaboration called Helix. They're a terrorist group, you know, a bunch of scientists stealing stuff, using it, you know, basic stuff that we've all played before. It's a nice intro adventure. You get a nice taste of the initial campaign setting. You're going to meet, I think they still call him Agent Wilson. We might have changed his name now. Our version of Phil Coulson, he's going to be your main guy to reach the world. The real difference in our setting, I think most people's setting is that when I built the setting, and this is going to sound weird, so just please forgive me for saying this. I wanted people to understand these people are not superheroes. But they are, but they're not. Like the tagline we always use, it's like, I'm not a superhero, I'm a soldier. I'm not a superhero, I'm a scientist. I'm not a superhero, I'm an engineer. So it's very much of like our version of the Avengers or JLA is Strike Force One. Imagine if Civil War had gone right. This is what the team would be. This is a very government-funded team, 100% working with the government. Our version of SHIELD, Eagle, is their liaison. So they work together. It's all good. It's perfectly set up. Dun-dun-dun. It's all happy and nice. We did our versions of the Fantastic Four, which is Twilight Inc. They are our tech group. But it's like, I love the Fantastic Four because they're built in the 60s, but we're in the 21st century now. That would be a large tech company, international conglomerate, where they do that kind of stuff. That's how we kind of built them like that. And so we've kind of done that with all like the traditional expected groups. So we have a group of spies based off of Checkmate. They are so ruthless, it's amazing. But they do what spies are supposed to do. The dirty stuff that people don't want to know about, that's what they do. And that's why they're doing it. And there's reasons for it. And we play that in the game for that reason. And so I've broken down the world kind of like this. It's just generic superheroes, sci-fi, fantasy, military, and covert ops. And we have groups to deal with each one of those. And we have like a, as I say, we have a teen group. We have a male hero, a female hero, and a teen hero. And they all fit those specific, each one has four of those. So you can see when stuff starts coming in, you'd be like, oh, that's so-and-so. Oh, that's such-and-such. And that kind of thing. And the villains we built have also fit the same kind of role. We have villains that you know, very familiar. We have an evil version of Professor X. We have...
That would suck.
Oh, yeah. We have one character. He's our very ominous character. His name is Gunther Haas. And Gunther Haas is the most hated character in our setting, without doubt. Gunther Haas is a 100% neo-Nazi, tattooed, swastika on the chest, doesn't care. I mean, he's out there, doesn't care. What makes him even more interesting is his powers. And I stole this, once again, steal the best stuff, from Nemesis Kid from Legion of Superheroes. So he gets your powers, but he gets them more powerful. So, I mean... And he gets it, I think the range we had him at was like a quarter of a mile. So the second you come within a quarter of a mile, you got superpowers, he's got your powers.
Ouch.
So it's like, you know, hey, imagine, so he doesn't get Wolverine's claws, but he gets better regeneration than Wolverine. You know, suppose he fights the Avengers. Okay, you get all of Cap's reflexes. You get none of Iron Man abilities. That's not so bad. Okay, you get all of Thor's abilities. Oh, that's horrible. How about the Scarlet Witch? Oh, that's bad. And then he knows like what the powers are. And what makes it even crazier, he used to be a member of Strike Force before.
Mm.
Because in our world, you get powers, you have to go off to these academies to get trained. He got trained, he got all this training, got all this skill, and became a jerk off, and they got rid of him due to certain events. And now he's for the highest bidder.
Now you have a lot of amazing universe products on Dive Through RPG. I've just been scrolling through them. This is some cool stuff. You've got an NPC player, NPC character deck. This looks like this would be super handy for a GM.
Yeah, I'm really nerdy on weird things like, oh, how can I make this easier for me to play the game? Let's get a deck because flipping through books, there's so many books and you can't remember where stuff is. Here's a deck. Boom. Here's a deck card. Boom. Here you go. Okay, great. Takes you 2 seconds. I'm all about utility and quickness. That's why we did character sheets. That's why we've done the whole campaign setting book. It's a PDF, and I don't want to put it in print because to me it's like, if you put it in print, use it once, you're never going to use it again. We have 40 sheets of all kinds of stuff you can use, all PDF, all fillable formats. You can use it over and over and over and over again. And so sad to say that I'm doing another one that I've gotten, I think we got 23 sheets so far, and we're still adding to it every day. I don't know when I'm going to release it. It's called my GM and Players Toolkit. Just stuff you can use. I mean, I'm big on if it's useful, let's do it because people are going to use it. I use it. You know, I'm thankful when people have stuff like that. I don't want to figure out stuff. It's like, oh, great. Did all her work for me? Click, click, click. Here you guys go. And it's PDF. You can just send it out. Here you go. Have a great time.
Yeah, looking at your plot twist cards right now, this is a pretty cool idea.
Oh, that's a steal from, do I even have them near me? Oh, I've got my ones I did. Ah, almost caught. Here. But I stole the idea from an old OGL D20 deck who did that. And a couple of companies did it. Then Paizo did one. And I was like, oh, for superheroes, we should do one. And I did an old one that was not that great. And I said, oh, let's ramp it. Let's put some color on it. And Mark Hart was so thankful. So thankful he helped me with that. That was a monstrosity that I dropped over David's lap. But he kindly smiled, took care of it, and kept on moving.
Now, it looks like I'm seeing a lot of smaller products. Like the handbook is $10.99, but there's an awful lot of just $1.99 products here. Is there eventually going to be a big compendium with like everything in the Amazing Universe?
Yes, maybe, kind of, sort of. I like to give people options. I mean, it always upsets me as when people say, oh, I got this PDF for $20. You want to pick it up? And it's like, I don't know if it's any good. What if it, you know, I've been $20 and I'm upset, you'll never get a customer back. But I'm like, hey, for $2, you can pick it up. You can say if it sucks or not. And if you like it, get our bundle. I discount on the bundle. And if you do a big collected thing, you're going to still get a discount off that too. Because I don't think you have to go crazy on the money. Because I mean, look, you're printing it if you're printing it. So I save cost on that. I run the numbers very tight and I make sure we do things very effectively. I do all the graphic design in my books. I mean, I've been a graphic designer for 30 years, so it's, you know, I save money that way. So it's like, if I can find ways that you don't have to go broke buying my stuff, I really appreciate that. I just, you know, it's look, I'm selling you light. I'm literally selling you light. I should be able to cut some cost somewhere.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's the kind of price point I like too. It's an easy buying if they like it. Hey, here's a back catalog of stuff. How about that?
Yeah.
So, all right, cool. So now you were talking about on your Patreon wanting to do an ad exchange with other M&M publishers. Yes. You want to talk about that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, yeah, we're getting ready to do our next line of our Twilight Inc. books release. Mark's working on them right now. And I'm like, yeah, we should just put ads in. I mean, because it's cool and people would like ads. I mean, if you're a third-party publisher and you want to send us an ad, please send us an ad. I have, you know, send us a PDF, 8.5 by 11, you know, PDF. We'll put in the book. You know, we'll put a link to your product. You sell more, we'll sell more. Why would we not want that? You know, it's not, you know, it ain't rocket science. I'm not, oh my God, that's so ingenious. No. You know, if we all do well, we all do well.
All right, cool. So is this building up to like, is there a big world book coming out at some point or?
The theory is yes. I don't know. I've done 4 campaign settings. Well, yeah, I've done 4 campaign settings over like 7 books. And I've come to the conclusion, I get why people want them, but at the same time, it's like, oh, it's the fluff part. And I don't know if I want to have people pay for fluff.
But yeah, go ahead, sorry.
No. But at the same time, I got to pay writers. So it's like, how do you find the middle? Where's the fair middle for everybody?
Yeah, I have 2 thoughts on that. Number one is whenever I'm writing fluff in an adventure or campaign setting, you know, there's a large percentage of your audience base are going to say, hey, that's very nice. I'm going to make up my own thing now.
Right.
And then you've also got a part of your audience base, and I don't know how big it is, who are just buying it to read.
Right.
And I wish I had hard numbers on, you know, which segment is bigger so you can know which one to cater to more. But I try to strike somewhere in the middle with enough fluff so it suggests some things, but not so much that it looks like there's a novel I want to write somewhere, and this is my way of, you know, getting bits and pieces of it out.
Well, I mean, our favorite trick is that we use the word redacted a lot in our books. You know, this thing's redacted. This thing's redacted. Because we don't know where it's going to be, or we haven't thought about it yet, or we thought it would just be cool to leave the word redacted in there. So, you know, it gives you a lot of options. And, you know, it's tough because, you know, when you build an entire world and you have an idea of how it goes, when people play in it and they do something different, you get a twinge like, oh, that's not how that goes. Or even worse, the hidden stuff that you've hidden in it for a reason, they don't know why it's hidden yet, and they've done something totally different. You're like, ooh, that's going to hurt that later. So it's like, you know, I don't know. Campaign setting book again. I don't know. It's a tough scenario because you want people to read it to understand it. But I think if they play the adventures, that's the better way to get it. Because reading it's one, that's great. You read some great fiction, that's beautiful, I get it. But when you play in it, you remember. You know, you remember, we all remember the first time we stuck our hand in that green-faced demon and Tomb of Horrors and how bad it went.
This is true.
You know, it's like White Plume Mountain, my favorite one. When jumping from platform to platform and you slip and fell off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's stuff like that. That's the stuff that stays in your head. The fluff, you read it. Oh, I read this is great fluff. But if you experience it, I think you get the better feel from it. I think you feel better about it. I think you enjoy it more. I think it clocks in your psyche better.
Yeah, I remember talking to an old school gamer, well, old school, 90s. And we were talking about how reading the books for World of Darkness was a completely different and separate experience from playing games in the World of Darkness. And the two things almost never had anything in common.
Right. It's a very weird thing. I mean, gaming is, it's like half fiction writing and half tabletop playing. And they don't always mix together, which is so weird because guys, they put their heart and soul and develop these worlds and they're supposed to work a certain way, and they never do.
I'm sorry. I was just going to ask on these smaller releases with that Mike's showing right now. You know, a lot of these releases tie back into Strike Force One.
Yeah.
Do you have rules and stuff like that GMs can use to take these characters and make them the bad guys so that if they need a bad guy for a game at the table, they just have.
I always believe that you can take anybody and take them to a bad guy. You know, there's the stat blocks are stat blocks, the pictures are pictures. We have them as listed as good guys, but you can turn them to, they can be bad guys. Like, same exact motives, just make it more sinister. We want to protect America by keeping you trapped in a box by doing only what we tell you. Hey, you're a villain. You know, it's, and we portray them as heroes. And our villain line, when it comes out, as we do everything in blue, our villain line will be all in red. So that's usually the giveaway. You'll know who's who. And, you know, our villains are villainous, but they could be good guys, too. I mean, I always go back to this one. This one drives me crazy when I have to say this, I'm just so amazed. Black Panther is Killmonger. You know, the line, how close he could have been a villain. I mean, it's thin. It's like razor thin. And, you know, people go, oh, I can understand his motives. I can get behind those motives. And it makes sense. So good guy, bad guy, what does it really take? You know, like the Joker says, all it takes is one bad day, you to wind up like me. And that's how we got the Killing Joke. And that proved that one pretty truthfully.
So what's the game table at your house like? Because, I mean, you know, with all this
fun. Table? What? What's that? Game table?
Right?
Come on, game publisher, son. I've decided it was much more fun to make books. Of charts of money. Why would I want to play a game? That would make sense. I don't get to play as much as I was a single father, game publisher. I don't get to play as much as I'd like to. I mean, it's rare in between. And usually with people I know at my local gaming store. It's tough. It's the toughest part about being in publishing is you lose the ability to game, which is so weird when you think about it, because people think, oh, you get to play games all day. It's like, kind of. I get to have crazy ideas that come in my head. You know?
We're going to game after I answer those 47 emails, talk to those two independent artists.
Right.
Cut these checks.
And then I'll be ready to go. I'll be ready to go. You're going to love it.
Oh, wait, I got to pick my kid up from school. Never mind.
I thought I got into publishing to play more games. It's like, no, I got into publishing to be a publisher. And it's not a bad thing, but they are separate things. We had an individual come to me recently, wanted to work for us. And he made a character. He wanted to show off his skills and make a character. He did it all on Hero Lab. And I'm like, okay. And then usually the test, I do a basic test. I'll use a hero that you already know, somebody you know very well, Spider-Man, Green Lantern. I'm like, all right, make me this character, but make him different. Make him different. Give me something about him that's different that you can easily go, oh, okay, great. And for Green Lantern, the favorite thing that people do, which I still don't get this, they make Dr. Spectrum. And like, I'm a comic book fan. I know about Dr. Spectrum. That's not a good, I mean, I know, I mean, do something really different. And then they'll try again. And then they'll usually by the second time they'll be like, I don't want to do this. This is too complicated. And it's like, well, that's what we do all day long. That's exactly what we do. You know, and some people get it and some people don't. And, you know, Owen Casey Stevens has been doing a lovely thread on his Facebook and his Twitter about, you know, it's so true. It's devastating.
Yeah, that's I think the hashtag is real gaming industry or
real game industry. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's true. It's 100% true. It's 100% true. And it's funny because we're laughing about it. Like, but if in our heart of hearts, we're like, oh, it's so true. And it's so wrong.
I don't think Owen's trying to talk people out of the business.
Right.
On the other hand, that thread would be the most effective thing.
Prepared for the realities.
Yeah. But even when people hear it, they still don't believe it. They're like, no, it can't be. It's like, look, it's a great business. It's fun. It's interesting. You get to be creative. It's all that fun stuff. But when...
I remember when I was studying journalism in college, and I was talking to the guy who was the head of a program at my university. He was like, you know, journalism is dying. Papers are closing down. This can be a great sideline for you. At that moment, I was like, shit, I need to get a business degree, don't I? So that's kind of how I view my publishing business. It's fun, something I do for an outlet that's not, you know, doesn't pay the mortgage.
It keeps you off the streets. you can't get all the drugs. This is too much money involved. So it's like, that's what I do it for.
Keeps my neighbors safe because I'm on the streets. I'm a threat. I'm a dangerous man. But, I'm occupied in geeky stuff. World is safe for now. So
that's how you got to look at it. And the funny part to me, it's like people understand what we're doing and people like what we're doing. The weirdest part to it is the piracy aspect to it, which I used to get crazy about it, but I've stopped doing that now. But it's like the mentality is I love your work. I want other people to see it. I'm going to give away for free. And it's like, that means I don't get any money. Oh, that's right. It's like, yeah. And you get the flip side of, oh, it's too expensive. It's like, is it really? I just saw PlayStation 5 come out for $700. It's relative, and I get it. And the people who are involved in this need to understand the value of what we're doing. Even though our name isn't Paizo or Watts and stuff like that. If someone's giving you good stuff, cost them a couple bucks. It doesn't cost you much. It's a couple bucks,
And I think Patreon is great for that kind of thing.
Right. I think our lowest tier is a buck. Yeah, buck is our lowest tier. It's a buck. I wish, and this is my love of comic books coming through. The problem I have with the modern day comic book is the price has gotten to a point where it's too expensive. All right, so I go with my same analogy. I have a female friend of mine. She has four children. She was a single mom for a long time. And her kids were, within the perfect age for comic book reading. But if you want to buy a comic book for each of those kids, you got to spend $16. No mother in her right mind is going to spend $16 on that many comics. It's just not going to happen. But if you could do a dollar comic book somehow, and to me it's like Marvel, you have tons of books that you could reprint over and over. Put them in Walmart, get people interested in reading them and get them hooked. It doesn't cost you anything. You could use the original covers if you wanted to. And, like they're doing now, they're doing more of that now, but still it's like they're not promoting the places where you think they want to be. Walmart. Cheap comic books belong in Walmart. Give them a buck comic book. They'll love it. They'll be happy. Everybody will be like, oh my, great. A dollar comic book for my kids. And that's how you get them reading. And once they get reading, you get them hooked. But that doesn't happen for some weird reason, which I don't understand.
Yeah, I got a 7-year-old, and he loves comics, but the comics he's reading are like Dogman.
Right.
Which no one wants to talk about, but it's the best-selling graphic novel by a large margin.
Oh, yeah.
They sell at the book fairs, the grade schools, and kids see it, and there's ninjas and robots, and there's this dog who's also a cop, and they love that shit.
Well, it's like that was like us when we used to get comic books, just classics, and you'd see that kind of stuff, but like the companies have forgotten that, and I get what Marvel has. I mean, Marvel is owned by Disney, and Disney is very much a corporation. Warner Brothers used to care, and it doesn't seem like they care anymore. And to me, it's like, okay, so you've got all these third-tier companies. Why aren't they doing it? Image Comics could put out their old books for a buck just to get people interested. And that's the gimmick. Just get them interested. You get them interested in reading, it's going to help everybody else out. Anime took over when people got to see anime, and people started talking about it and trading stuff. And then it became super popular, and now it's just part of what we do. Oh, anime? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've seen anime, and everybody has.
What is this anime you speak of?
It's this whole Japanese thing. I've heard they do cartoons. It's kind of, a little retro. But once again, I got an anime when I saw Akira and saw Ninja Scroll. So I'm Ghost in the Shell. And I was like, oh, this is cool. What's this? And then, like everything else, it led me to some other stuff. And we as publishers, we as game fans, we as players, we as collectors, it's kind of our duty to just keep this going. I like comics. I'm glad that Marvel has movies. Don't get me wrong. It's my dream has come true. I've seen Captain America on the screen. Captain America is actually cool. I mean, because I read Cap. I read Cap for 30 years easily. And we're talking doing that tough Mark Grunwald Cap Wolf series. I read through that too. So, yeah. You know,
my biggest fear about a Cap movie was they were going to have long monologues in the middle of fight scenes.
You know, and I never understood. It's like Cap, Mark Waid said it best. Captain America is a Boy Scout, but he's the ultimate Boy Scout. You know, that's how you see him. It's like, oh, he's prepared. He's going to be prepared. And he doesn't have to be cocky. He doesn't have to, no, he's the guy you're worried about because he knows he's going to take you down. But he just has that much confidence. And to me, I mean, Winter Soldier, just hands down, they got that. They got him right. They got the Falcon right. They got the Winter Soldier right. Scarlett Joe was not my choice for Black Widow, but that's a personal choice. But it's like, if you're going to present that kind of character in that kind of setting, you couldn't have done it better.
Yeah. You know? Mark Waid had a good quote about Cap where he said he writes him like a Clint Eastwood character in the 70s Western. You know, he never says what he's going to do. He just does something.
And, right.
I think that's the best way to do it. I mean, as opposed to the default Cap mode in comics, which is I'm going to punch you and then I'm going to recite this freshman political science paper about what why you're doing it wrong.
Right. And, it, and to me, it's so weird because it's like, I don't understand why they think they have a need to do that with Cap anymore. It's like, Cap, we already know, we all know what Cap's about.
I think the best scene for Captain America, I mean, everybody's talking, you know, constantly talking about him grabbing the hammer. You know, but I mean, for myself, the best scene that really exemplifies that character. And when we get together to game, having a character like that at the table who can really pull this off, you get shivers because, you know, he lands on top of the car and he looks at the cop and he's like, look, I need you to direct these people down second, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, well, who are you, buddy? And then he just does something like absolutely amazing. And the cop turns around and goes, I need you to direct these guys down second. And, you know, and you're just like, that kind of stuff and reading comics that did that back in the day was why I went in the military because I wanted to be, you know, it's even a semblance of that leader.
That's a good point.
It's Cap just presents himself. I would say that's the problem with Superman. Cap presents himself in such a much better way than Superman can. It's like Cap really was this skinny guy who got all the power and still remained incredibly humble. We didn't have to be. And it's like, Superman never started that way. Superman got all the power, and he's faking his humbleness. And it's like, dude, we all know, you know, you're pretty dangerous. You know, we're terrified of you, and you should be. You know, he literally is a god on earth. Cap is not that at all. You know, and it's like, he knows, I probably could kill everyone in this room, but I don't have to do that. That's not what I'm about. And people, A, respect that and know that he's like, you know, he was the weakling guy. And yeah, and just does the right thing. You know, it's hard to do the right thing. You know, it's the tough right thing.
Yeah. Dale Russell wanted to chime in on Facebook and say Cap Wolf was awesome.
A horrible lie. I don't believe that. And I mean, I told you, I love Mark Grunwald. I mean, I have the Squadron Supreme trade, the hardcover in my bookshelf. But those are some rough years. I can't even lie. I'm like, what were they thinking?
And then when, three or four years ago, when Falcon first took over the Shield, they did the Cap Falcon Wolf.
Yeah.
Why are you bringing this back?
Needed stories, so they'd reshred on every old story.
Had such a good thing though with what was going on at the time with Falcon being like kind of like joked about. I mean, they had this great scene in that series where Falcon is on the plane. And he's just going from one city to another, and these two kids are sitting there like, "Oh, Falcon is Captain America." This is, and they're scrolling through social media, right? And they have the phone, and this was a great scene, and the artist did a fantastic job of like portraying this. And the kid's scrolling, and he's like, "Can you imagine just whatever?" And he goes like this, and crosses out the face of Sam Wilson. And he's just like, right? And he goes, no, really, go on. I'd love to hear more. It was a really great scene.
It's funny. I love Falcon. I'm not happy when he was Cap, but I get the need for it. But I had a crazy idea right before Marvel revamped their whole thing with Hickman and their whole revamp of the series. They brought in Cap's kid, Ian, from the Art of Missoula run he did, and they were calling him Nomad. Mm-hmm. And they had him running around as Nomad and Falcon, and then there's Cap, there's the Winter Soldier, and then there was that other new Falcon, the kid who was like, and I was like, you know, if anybody had any kind of brain power, they would use all five of those characters in a rotating thing and have like two books, Super Soldiers, this one and this one. And you do, you're going to team up Cap with the new Falcon and Falcon with Nomad and just keep rotating it out each book. So you can see all five of them and how they interact. Because let's be honest, it's the same gimmick. It's I'm a hero and I'm going to be the right thing. But you've got guys, you've got Nomad and Winter Soldier who are heroes, but they're all the I'm going to kill you spectrum of it. You got Cap on there, and you could just do so much cool drama with that and just go back and forth. And then I was like, why didn't they ever do that? It's like, nope, never did that. Never. It's like they're stuck in the 70s, like early 80s, 70s, and they never want to break out of that spectrum. And to me, it's like Marvel made its bones by doing the crazy thing.
You know? Yeah, that was back in the days when Mark Waid was writing Avengers, when they had Falcon as Cap, and that's my favorite runs in recent times. I really enjoyed that. It seems like it was almost under the radar in a way, but
it's tough. I think it's always been tough because the Avengers as a book is not the JLA, and the problem is everybody's trying to turn them into the JLA. Let's put all the popular characters on the Avengers. No, that's not what they're about, you know. And like the run where they did like Wolverine and Power Man and Iron Fist, like no, that's not the Avengers. The Avengers fit this very specific dynamic, at least in my head. I mean, I'm an Avengers fan. I always have been, always will be. And the role they play is very, very important. But when you make them into the JLA, it doesn't make sense. The JLA is just, I mean, let's call it like it. They're the most top-heavy superhero group you could ever imagine. And their villains suck. Their villains are horrible.
That's why they're constantly having to have them fight, you know, the new gods, so they can actually face people who are on their same level.
Yeah, but it's like, to me, it's like Marvel. I said, Marvel's got all the great villains. DC's got all the great heroes. But at least Marvel heroes kind of make sense.
Yeah.
Like, DC villains never make sense. I think Brainiac is my only favorite. I think Brainiac is a concept. The look of him, I like the comic book where he had the very robotic look after it in Crisis. But I love the origin they did in the animated series. Let's make him Kryptonian. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like, let's go with that. I mean, I could go with that. That could be great. But it's like, that's it. Everybody else is out of like, meh.
You're not a fan of the Penguin or the Condiment King?
You know, look, they've been around a long time. I understand there's nostalgia. I get it. I get it. But Batman and Flash cannot be your only two guys of the best rogues gallery.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
You know, someone on Twitter yesterday was pitching a buddy book between Kyle Rayner and Wally West. And I'm like, yeah, I would buy the hell out of that. I mean, where are those characters now? I couldn't even tell you. Maybe Wally is dead these days.
Yeah. That'd be interesting. You know, that'd be kind of interesting. I mean, it was, they were, you know, they started doing that for a little bit in their books, but that's when they both were both kind of starting out. And it was like, okay, but it didn't go anywhere. You know, it's I mean, with Denny O'Neill dying, you know, just recently, and you think back to the Green Lantern, Green Arrow story. It's like, you know, they made a great buddy cop book, and you've got two sides of the same coin, and they're telling you two a great story between two different perspectives. They don't do that anymore, you know. This drives me crazy. I just, as a comic book fan, I want there to be good stories, tell good stories, and make good stories. But recently, the agenda at Marvel doesn't make any sense to me. You know, it's like. You know, it's like, what are villains doing? What are the villains doing now? What are the villains doing right now? What are the Masters of Evil doing right now? You know, one of my favorite times of Avengers when all the Masters of Avengers took the mansion. I mean, Siege is a great series. And you think of 27 members of the Masters of Evil fight 7 Avengers. You know, you've got, you know, Hercules gets pounced by the Wrecking Crew, Titania, Absorbing Man, and Titan. Yeah. That's 7 people right there that are all devastating in their own right. And it's like that kind of stuff you don't see anymore. you see heroes fight heroes. And it's like, that's great, and I get that, but I don't need to see heroes fight heroes. I want to see heroes fight villains.
Yeah.
Dale Russell is chiming in saying, Marvel forgot the Battlestar. There are a lot of stories with him.
There you go. See, that's somebody else we could have added. See, it's just Marvel has so many characters they can do stuff with that they don't. And for whatever reason, they don't. And it's like, Wolverine doesn't have to appear everywhere. I get him. I totally get it. He's your guy. Yeah. Okay. And X-23, a nice way to do the next generation Wolverine. Good move. Great character. Seeing her in Logan made a lot of sense. It was great. So it's like, great. Let's show more of her. Let's pull these characters back. Let's pull the classic characters back, but the new ones out. You don't have to do the same thing over and over and over.
I think we can call that the hot rod syndrome. Hey, here's a cool new character. Oh shit, here's the old one. You like him better, don't you?
Well, it's like I go back to Hal Jordan. Hal Jordan as Green Lantern. Hal Jordan as Green Lantern was great. The end of him with Parallax, great. You didn't have to bring Hal Jordan back. You definitely didn't have to bring Barry back. No one cared about Barry. No one. You cannot. No one's going to tell me Barry was their favorite hero. If they do, I'm like, you're lying.
I honestly loved the transition when they went from Barry to Wally West. It was a great transition.
And once again, who was the writer on that? Mark Waid.
Waid, yeah.
You know, Mark Waid, and then he gave it to Jeff Johns, and then Jeff Johns just ran with it. It's like, it's really sad that, like, Mark Waid is really good at understanding characters from a basic core level, and he hands it off to other people, and then the companies, you know, the companies are like, well, let's get back to status quo. It's like, you don't have to. You can, characters have to evolve and die. You know, you have to kill characters. People don't like to hear that, but you have to kill characters. You're going to have to kill characters, and DC does it better than most. DC has less legacy heroes, and we're used to it. Alan Scott was Green Lantern. Then Hal Jordan became. Then Johnson. You can pass the ring to other people. Whoever gets it becomes somebody different. But you don't have to keep the same guy. You can kill them. You can have them. Because heroes are going to die.
Yeah.
And the death can be important.
This was actually the point of my most recent Marvel game. I told my players, I want you to play the new generation of heroes. So they were playing, you know, X-23 and the characters from Young Avengers and some of the newer characters that have been introduced in X-Men, like Pixie and Mercury, as opposed to the old guard who you're used to, because the idea is passing the torch, we're moving on.
Well, and to me, the funny part is that you want diversity. Well, you've got to get rid of the old characters.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, look, Peter Parker, Spider-Man will always be Spider-Man. We all know that. Miles Morales could be a great Spider-Man. Even Gwen Stacy is good. It's like, but you've got to find a way to remove the regular character. It's like, look, I'm going to take a sabbatical. I've been doing this a long time. I'm going to take a break. I think I've deserved a break. You know, I'm going to relax. I'm going to go off with my wife and do amazing things. And that's how you do it. And just let the characters be themselves.
Yeah. Thankfully, we have RPGs where we can do things as we see fit. So
that's the best part.
On that happy note, I have to get back to my day job, unfortunately, weekend work. But Lewis, thank you very much for coming out, sir. It's a pleasure talking to you.
No problem, man. You know, I love comics. We can always talk that.
For those publishers who want to get in touch with you and start collaborating, what's the best way to track you down?
Let me give you my email. This is the best way to get in touch with me. It's very simple. It's LMP, that's Lewis Manuel Porter, JR007@gmail.com.
Best email address ever.
Yeah, it's like, look, I'm a Bond fan. Everybody knows. That's not a surprise. You forget, it's my initials plus Junior plus Bond.
Nice. All right. Thanks for coming on. And to all our viewers and listeners, we will see you next time on the BAMF podcast.
Thanks so much.
And now there's an awkward moment between hit and broadcast, and we actually go.